Welcome to the GEMS Report, brought to you by Clarion Events, Fire and Rescue Group, and the Journal of Emergency Medical Services. I'm Ted Lee, the Editor-in-Chief of GEMS, and along with Jeff Frankel, our Managing Editor, we will be bringing you industry experts and leaders in EMS and EMS-related topics to discuss hot things in the news today. We are very lucky to have a special guest as part of our Women's History Month. We have Dr. Molly McCann-Penio from Northwell Health. She is the Director of Clinical Research in the Emergency Services Line, as well as an Assistant Professor for the Zucker School of Medicine at Hofstra. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to come on here today and speak to you about some of our research. And obviously, it's an honor to be able to close out Women's History Month. So thank you. Yes.
So, you know, why don't you start a little bit with your background? Tell our audience, you know, who you are, where you're coming from, and maybe why you feel this is so important.
So, as you mentioned, I'm currently the Director of Clinical Research for Northwell Health, the Emergency Medicine Service Line, and I'm an epidemiologist by training. So I got my doctoral degree from the University of Rochester in New York. I also have my master's in epidemiology. So I'm, I guess, a research nerd, you could say. So my role largely comprises of conducting clinical research. And, you know, I have been involved in pre-hospital and emergency medicine related research for almost 9 years now. And more recently, my research program has shifted towards EMS occupational and personal health. So my goal is to obviously improve the health and well-being of all of our EMS clinicians, right? So that's where, you know, a lot of the following material that I'm going to be presented on focuses on occupational health. So yeah, that's currently where I am now. And, you know, before we get into any of some of the topics that we're going to discuss today, I just want to present that women in EMS specifically find it as a very worthy occupation. And I myself, after learning what we have learned throughout our research process, I'm enrolled to get my EMT certification. So I think that that should speak volumes to how women at baseline view EMS as an occupation.
Be careful, you're going to take your first class and the bug is going to bite you and then you're going to be in. So
I know. My husband will kill me if I get any more degrees. I already brought up paramedic school and he's like, no way. So yeah. We'll have to see where it takes me.
So it's interesting. You mentioned that you've been conducting research in various EMS or pre-hospital things for about 9 years. And that seems to be the trend. Do you notice that, you know, research is picking up in that area?
Yes. So pre-hospital medicine is, I would like to say that we've come out of our infancy and we're in our adolescence right now, but it's such a unique focus of emergency medicine. And I often think that it's understudied and underutilized just because EMS is the entryway into any health system, right? So right. I think it requires undivided attention in certain aspects. So that's where I've always been very interested in conducting EMS related research. So that's where I am today.
Yeah. You see a lot of that stuff picking up. And of course, I mean, those of us who are gray and have been in it for a while, you know, we always did things anecdotally. Well, if it works in the hospital or if the research was conducted in the hospital, then it automatically would make sense pre-hospital wise. And, you know, then some things we would realize it doesn't. It doesn't translate very well. We don't have the same resources. We don't have the same material, the same medications, things like that. So it was difficult for us to do that. And seeing that, you know, the emphasis on, and it's bleeding down into, you know, the individual services and even the individual providers now about looking at, okay, why are we doing this? What is the true impact? And we need data. We need the research in pre-hospital medicine to prove, yes, we should be doing this, or no, we shouldn't be doing this anymore. We need to be going, you know, a different way.
Exactly. And that's how all research starts, right? Mm-hmm. All of my studies, all of the studies that, you know, I work with my colleagues, they're all anecdotal, right? So, hey, right. You know, somebody comes to me with a problem. Hey, I've noticed this. Well, all right, let's try and go figure this out. So, you know, everything is based off of what you guys experience in the field. And, you know, my job as a non-clinician right now is to be able to help you answer those questions. So it's being able to take what you guys experience on the road in a moving box, trying to do chest compressions, holding yourself up while you're going 95 down the highway. You need research in order to validate, you know, what you guys are bringing to us. So that's where I come in.
Yeah. And that's great, you know, because, you know, it is important that we're not spending resources, you know, time, money, you know, on things that just aren't working or that don't seem to be working. And, you know, it's so fluid and so dynamic. And you mentioned that, you know, EMS is the entryway into healthcare systems. You know, we have been this way since, you know, the late 60s. But it adapts so much and, you know, times are changing and technology changes and, you know, environments change and, you know, population demographics are shifting, you know, from urban to suburban to rural and how those agencies are trying to adapt to those type of issues. You know, the research is going to bear out, okay, yeah, this is what we should be doing. And it may be very different, you know, from Los Angeles to rural Kansas, you know, or Wyoming to Miami. It's going to be very different because the resources are different and the population is different. So it is interesting and refreshing to see that we're looking at things a little bit more specifically. So to your topic of, you know, looking at healthcare providers and women in EMS and of course other minorities or other demographics, what are you working on currently, or, you know, what are your plans for, you know, addressing some things? Because mental health and just health and wellness seems to be jumping to the top of a lot of conversations when we start talking about recruitment, retention, you know, why people aren't staying in EMS, or, you know, just issues that we're having, you know, with the workforce.
Yeah, so I think that COVID pandemic has really brought a lot of these issues into our faces, right? So I think that mental health, you know, burdens experienced among first responders, specifically EMS clinicians, has always been there, right? Just simply due to the nature of your occupation. You know, you're frequently exposed to repetitive, you know, difficult situations, traumatic situations. So I think that the issue of mental health has always been there. I just think that the COVID pandemic has kind of catapulted us into this, you know, need for identifying and addressing some of these issues. So before I get into some of the specifics of my personal research, I do just want to be able to provide a brief landscape of, you know, mental health among our EMS clinicians that are experiencing today. So, you know, again, I think it's a very important and under-discussed topic. I mean, it's gotten more traction since the pandemic, but it often is very heavily intertwined with many of the experiences that EMS clinicians report, irrespective of gender, right? So EMS has been noted to be one of the most stressful, inherently difficult occupations. Like I said, just due to the nature of your exposures to, you know, difficult situations, you have very limited resources, very difficult hours. So, you know, all of these things have the potential to have an adverse psychological effect, right? EMS clinicians specifically have been reported to have elevated risk of numerous mental health outcomes, anxiety, PTSD, depression, sleep disturbances, and burnout. And as we mentioned, the COVID pandemic has just kind of exacerbated a lot of these outcomes. And, you know, some of the recent pandemic evaluations of EMS mental health, you know, has found some very, very significant burdens. You know, some evaluations, anxiety is upwards of, 28 to 37%, same with depression. There was one study where they separated EMS clinicians specifically, and they reported rates of depression as high as 83%, anxiety almost 80%, PTSD 36%. So these are all very significant burdens that our EMS clinicians are facing. And, you know, for comparison, in the general population, all of these outcomes hang around about 5%.
Right.
So what does that say? That means our clinicians are experiencing a very significant burden, and they're continuing to experience this burden years after the initial onslaught of the COVID pandemic, right? Because these reports are you know, very recent. So we know that this is a very persistent type of problem. And, you know, as part of our study we conducted, you know, which was specifically on female EMS clinicians, and I'll get into a little bit more about the methodology in a minute, but, you know, we found that, and this was conducted in 2023, right? So not that long ago, and 70% of our female clinicians reported, you know, meeting the criteria for anxiety, almost 54% depression, 42% burnout. So, you know, I think mental health among EMS clinicians at this point is begging for change, begging for recognition. Because if we don't take care of you guys, how are you guys going to take care of your patients, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, and that plays into, you know, the broader problem, you know, where people are talking about recruitment and retention, and how do we have enough providers for the workload that we're trying to do. And this is a big part of it. And, you know, for a long time, people have ignored this. You know, it's, you know, if you're not tough enough to do this job, then get out. You know, that's just the way that it was. And that was the mentality. But I always mentioned, and there's a lot of things, you know, that revolve around COVID, and the days of, well, we've always done it this way, doesn't apply anymore. You know, we've never done this. We never did COVID before. So, you know, all the gloves come off, and we're just open with opportunities for us to really start addressing things that maybe have, you know, been lagging in the past, and say, okay, we can no longer allow this to not be addressed, or to not look at it, to look for real answers. So.
Right. Yeah. And I think you touched on something with, you know, the idea of stigma regarding mental health, yeah, and accessing appropriate resources that is pervasive across all first responders and military populations. We know this, right? But I think, as you mentioned, COVID has kind of been that crossroad of, well, we really should kind of address this now, right? You know, people are not doing well, retention, turnover, you know, those are very difficult things that a lot of EMS agencies are experiencing right now. And one of the big things, as you mentioned, is, you know, addressing mental health and providing the necessary resources for our providers to be able to access. So yeah, that's definitely.
The big thing too, I think, really is, you know, normalizing it, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of people for, you know, a long time, and, you know, periods in my career too, you'd go through things and you're like, I don't understand why I feel this way or why this is going on. And then if I don't understand why, I don't understand how to resource help for it, I'm just kind of stuck. And if we can get people unstuck and help them to say, okay, this is normal, this is a normal response, and here's how, you know, here are your resources to help you with this, I think we'll go much, much farther, much faster along these lines.
Yeah, and I think that there's a lot of unique clinical considerations in, you know, offering mental health and behavioral health services to EMS providers. You know, there just really is a huge limitation of these types of programs, particularly in agencies that are volunteer versus paid. You know, the access to these types of programs can be very minimal. Also, the training of the clinicians in, you know, offering this help is so minimal. I mean, going to a provider, if you get up that courage to go see a therapist, a doctor, most of them are not trained at the nuances of understanding what a first responder or an EMS or clinician or a paramedic goes through. So there's a lack of training even on the clinician side to be able to treat them effectively. And that's what we have found often highly discouraging among, you know, all first responders trying to seek mental health care. And, you know, so that's an issue. There's also, you know, the scheduling is so difficult. The hours are so difficult. Most EMS clinicians work multiple jobs, which also kind of complicates these things. And, you know, there's been the lack of consideration of all of these types of issues or, you know, difficult barriers, I'll say, in order to access these, you know, these, the appropriate mental health care. So I think now we're at the forefront of really trying to find and tailor specific interventions, mental health programs that are more appropriate for EMS providers.
Yeah. So getting into the specifics of what you're working on now.
Sure. So, I'll transition into some of our most recent work, which specifically focused on female EMS clinicians. And it was a mixed method study that was supported by a grant we received through the CATS Institute of Women's Health through Northwell. Just for a little disclosure that this was funded by a grant. And what prompted this work was that, obviously, again, anecdotally, my team and I experiencing what our clinicians are going through, there is there's a paucity of literature on EMS clinician occupational health in general, and there's literally nothing on females specifically. So, in an attempt to kind of address this gap, we conducted a mixed method study, meaning we have qualitative and quantitative components. So qualitative meaning we conducted focus groups. So we had a series of focus groups full of female EMS clinicians. And then afterwards, we conducted a cross-sectional survey to try and contextualize whatever we found from the focus group settings. And through our focus groups, again, this was largely conducted across Northeastern agencies. We conducted three of them, and we identified, some pretty important, in my opinion, themes and sub-themes regarding, the female EMS experience, right? And, we found some that were great and some that were not so great, right? So I think, maybe we'll get some of the not so great out of the way and end with what is great about EMS, right? So, I think one of the most frequently discussed topics throughout the focus groups, which honestly we were not surprised by, was, the issues of sexual harassment or harassment and sexism. So, this is not a unique problem to EMS, right? This is experienced among almost all male dominated professions. EMS has, I think it's a 72 split right now. So it's 72% males. We see this in militaristic or hierarchical occupations where, this is frequently reported, right? We know from the female firefighter literature that this is, again, something that is experienced pretty frequently. And, I think because historically women have shared very little space within these types of cultures, so it's not surprising that some of these issues were highlighted. And from our survey, we did, it kind of backed up what we found from our focus groups that, over 70% of women experienced at least one, experience of sexism while working or harassment, whether it's verbal, physical, or sexual, perpetrated predominantly by patients, but they also reported, instances of colleagues, coworkers. So, I think that this is not something unique to EMS. I think that, it's just inherent to the culture because it's been male dominated for so long. So, and again, like I said, this is not inherent to EMS. We've seen this in firefighting populations, military populations. So again, we really weren't surprised by, the presentation of these types of concerns. But one of the other major topics that I would just like to discuss, just because I think that it's something that we can address moving forward, and that's the issue of pregnancy and maternity related concerns, which to me I found rather surprising, just because there have been so many improvements, at the federal level, the state level, that offer certain provisions, protections, accommodations for, pregnant employees. So I found some of the issues that, our female EMS providers talking about, I was a little surprised by. And again, as I noted, I'm not a clinician yet. So I was really not privy to, many of the difficulties that a pregnant EMS clinician, face or experience. And right. I don't think I need to tell anyone listening how difficult it must be, trying to intubate or perform chest compressions while you're 7 months pregnant. Right. I've had some women tell me, like, I don't know how they do it. That's all I'm going to say. Like, that's truly a talent to be able to intubate with a 7 month belly in the way. So, a lot of these issues were brought up by women who have experienced a pregnancy as an EMS clinician, but then they're also their female partners speaking on behalf of their pregnant friends, colleagues, that, some of these issues that they have seen. And, some of the top ones were appropriate fitting uniforms, the difficulty of finding ones that adapt to the changing body of a pregnant woman. Some other participants spoke about just the availability and access to light duty positions or those that would be less physically demanding. And some, you know, unfortunately were denied even with the doctor's note. And, you know, we recognize that, you know, this is something that is very difficult for agencies to support just, you know, simply due to resources. So, you know, trying to be able to figure out ways to kind of address these issues while being very understanding to, you know, how EMS systems are created and how operations work, you know, this is going to be a pretty big challenge. So, you know, these are some of the issues for pregnancy and related concerns that we think that, you know, I think if we get a little bit creative, we might be able to address. And some of the other, you know, maternity related issues, a lot of women reported, you know, delayed family planning, you know, and episodes of miscarriage, which, you know, as a female myself, I found that very disheartening. And I mean, it took me years to get my daughter, so I couldn't imagine having to delay that process even further, simply just due to my my occupation. So, you know, I know the first, you know, talking about these things are not easily discussable, right? And they're, you know, not even desirable, but unfortunately they are a reality of what female EMS clinicians are facing. And, you know, on top of, you know, some of these issues, which I think were the most, I think, addressable ones, you know, we also found other issues that impacted their personal and occupational well-being. But I think that these are largely experienced by EMS clinicians in general, right? So right. Job demands, you know, call volumes, impact on family and friends, mistrust, disappointment. I think that these are, you know, almost ubiquitous across any EMS clinician. You know, I don't think that they are necessarily gender specific. I do think that there may be some gender specific components to some of those concerns, but I think a lot of, you know, what we did find are experienced just by being an EMS clinician in general and not specifically, you know, gender. Yeah. So, you know, but with that being said, we also found significant evidence that overwhelmingly there are so many positive interactions between female and male partners and peers. We had so many women saying how great their partners are, how supportive they are, how they stand up for them. And that was, again, supported by our survey. You know, all of the interactions with male peers and partners were either very good or good. You know, vast majority of them were good or very good. So, you know, I think that this point is very critical because it highlights that there is, you know, the continuation of females within the workforce should happen. And, you know, yeah, it's a benefit to everyone, right? So I think, you know, since publishing this work, we have found ourselves at a crossroad, right? So it may not be necessarily a welcomed crossroad, but we believe that what we found from our work has provided us with an opportunity for growth, right? And I clearly do not have all of the answers, right? I do not and cannot comprehend the nuances of EMS systems and operations as an administration to be able to truly speak on addressing some of these issues, right? So I think my question, you know, coming here and my question to anyone listening, the greater EMS audience, is where do we go from here, right? You know, how can we best take what we've learned and create systems and environments that effectively engage and retain female clinicians, right? And I think the ultimate goal of any pre-hospital work is the sustainability of EMS, right? We're all working and striving towards keeping this as, you know, systems that can stand on their own and grow and provide, you know, appropriate care for our communities and our patients, right? But then again, like, I don't have the answers, right? And I work with some of the best and brightest in EMS. And even then, you know, we can't figure this out, right? So, you know, we think that this is going to be a collective effort, and we're reaching out to our clinicians, to our leaders, to help us move into not necessarily a new direction, but maybe a modified direction. And that's obviously towards elevating, you know, some of these experiences of our female EMS clinicians.
Yeah. Well, I think with anything, you know, the first step, of course, is that we're willing to talk about it, you know, that it's able to be brought to the boardroom or the office, or, you know, the crew is able to discuss these type of things. And of course, there's always the opportunity where, you know, there is a naive aspect of it. I had no idea, you know, I didn't realize that this was, but in today's day and age, we're getting less and less of I had no idea. I mean, when your topic on pregnancy, we're a healthcare, for crying out loud. How do you not realize, you know, the impacts of pregnancy on workers when you work in healthcare? You have to be aware that there's issues with that. And, you know, for us to the broader issue of, you know, recruitment and retention, you know, I've been a long proponent of, you know, our agencies should look a lot like what our communities look like. If we're doing a really good job with recruitment and retention, we should look like our communities. And for, you know, for lack of, you know, whatever you mentioned, it was a male dominated profession for a really long time. And a lot of the males look like me, you know, ex-military, bald guy, white, this is who we were. But that's not who we are. And if we are going to move to the future and we're going to be effective, and we're going to have a long storied history, you know, with us, you know, we have to address those things moving forward. You know, we just have to. So bringing these things up, and then I think a lot of times too, with a lot of research that comes up is, like, oh, well, we're looking for answers. And they're like, okay, well, all this research really told us was we don't have any answers. Okay, well, then that gives us step two. Let's start moving towards answers. How do we address the things that we didn't even know that necessarily that we weren't addressing, or that we had a great idea of this is exactly what we should do, and the research told us we should have nothing to do with this. We should be going in a totally different direction. Okay, now we know. And let's start moving in those directions. So,
yeah. And I think that's the unique aspect of research is I have all of these great ideas, and I go to one of my female paramedics and I tell her, and they're like, that will never work. So, you know, it's a collective effort, right? Like right. She comes to me with ideas and I'm like, ooh, you know, methodologically, I don't know how we could do that. So it has been, this has been such a huge labor of love, and this has been a partnership. We have involved female, you know, paramedics, EMTs at every step of the way, because again, it's not lost on me the importance of including these individuals in research, right? And I truly, truly believe that EMS clinicians are an untapped potential for research partners, right? They have the capacity to do it, the knowledge to do it. I mean, some of them know more than any of the doctors, you know, as far as certain topics. So being able to include them in research, I think, is just such an untapped potential. And it's really encouraging to see more and more want to get involved to answer some of these questions. So I've been very fortunate to be very supported by a lot of female clinicians for this work. And, you know, like I said, it's teamwork. We're trying to come up with very creative, you know, initiatives to try and address some of these issues. And to be honest, I have absolutely no clue how it's going to turn out. But I think because we're willing to take that initiative and the opportunity to try, I think that that's going to open up a lot of doors. Just as you said, like, this is definitely not going to work, or hey, maybe we could do this. And I think just simply the size of Northwell's EMS agency, that if we can showcase that, hey, at Northwell, we can do it. We, you know, we could use this as a blueprint for other agencies and learn how to adapt these initiatives for rural, for volunteer only agencies. So, you know, I think that it's very important that we utilize both research and anecdotal experiences to try and truly say, you know, yes or no, this is not going to work. And it's all trial and error. Yeah. I can't tell you how many times I have been rejected or told this is not going to work. But I think persistence is key. And I think for issues such as this, I think being a little persistent, no matter how undesirable, I guess, the topic may be, I think that it's going to try slowly open some doors.
Right. Well, and there's also, you know, you mentioned blueprints being able to be created. You know, we can't think that, you know, we can have a system in New York and we pick it up and we're going to go to Montana and we're going to throw down that same system in Montana. And we're like, it worked there. So it's got to work here.
Exactly.
It's just unrealistic. But we've got to believe that there's somewhere in that. And we're like, we can't do 9 of these 10 things, but this one thing we can definitely do. And we can show improvement on it. And then once we get that one done, well, then we can look at other ones as we go through. And, you know, we're doing this with things like mobile integrated health now, where, you know, right. the needs assessments where people are looking at. And, you know, some of the services, they have 23 different programs. But then you have a rural service from like 23. There's no way we can do this. But this one program that they have, we could definitely do here, and it could have a great impact on our community. And I think that's where we start. You know, we start, you know, how to eat an elephant, you know, one small piece at a time as you go through, you know, the old saying is. So, you know, instead of trying to do it all at once, you know, is there an aspect of it? Have we addressed, you know, a broader issue, and, you know, how do we get it a little bit better today so that tomorrow we're a little bit better again and we keep moving forward?
Exactly. And that, again, like I said, is the goal of what I do, is to improve the occupational and personal well-being of EMS clinicians. Some people have told me that I'm crazy. But again, I think that it is such an undervalued occupation. I think our clinicians don't receive enough credit. So, you know, it's kind of my life's mission to make sure yeah. that we can kind of improve, you know, not only our workers, our employees, but also the systems in which that they work. And we really need to begin to prop up these systems with, you know, good employee health and resources. Because like I said, we have to focus on the sustainability of EMS as a whole. And, you know, that means adapting from large health systems all the way down to 5-member crews in rural Montana. So it's important to keep all of those components in mind as we're moving forward.
Well, welcome to the group, because we all, yes, are a little crazy. So,
yeah, happy to be here. Happy to be here. Yeah.
So I really want to thank you for taking time out of your day to talk about this. This was extremely interesting. And, you know, we look forward to more opportunities of working with your group. We had mentioned a little bit of, you know, about articles or follow up podcasts or maybe even webinars on certain topics that directly relate to this. And I just think this is amazing work. And I want to thank you for being one of the ones that are willing to look at emergency medical services and pre-hospital providers, because like you said, you know, for a large group, they're just like, yeah, this is not a group that we're interested in delving into. So.
So again, thank you for the opportunity to be here. If anybody is interested in our work, it's now currently in publication in Pre-Hospital Emergency Care. Again, this is it's called the Female EMS Experience. So please check it out. If anybody has any questions, comments, concerns, my email address is listed there. And again, in closing, I just want to reiterate that our female EMS clinicians, especially in our study, find EMS as an inherently worthy occupation. And I think we really need to work towards continuing their integration into the workforce, just because we know our patients, communities, health systems all benefit from their inclusion.
Yes, very much so. And, you know, it's going to solve the problems that we have with recruitment and retention. You know, if EMS is going to be viable in 10 years, 20 years, 30 years down the road, we need to be addressing these type of things. So it is critically important that you know, these things come to light.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you again. And we look forward to hearing from you in the future.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.